So why is yeast so expensive?
Well, it is expensive if you're only using the yeast once, right? So if you are throwing yeast in, you make your beer and you throw that yeast out, it becomes a really expensive proposition. Most brewers are throwing the yeast out before it's really hit its straps and it's making great beer, which is a real shame.
G'day brewers, welcome to the Quality Focus Pro Brewers podcast. My name is Hendo, I'm from the Rockstar Brewer Academy, and today we are going to be having a chat with our first guest on this podcast, which I'm very excited about. Today we've got Derek Lacey from Bluestone Yeast. How you going, mate?
I'm well, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, mate, pretty good. Why don't you give us the quick 30-second rundown on what Bluestone Yeast is and how long you've been around and what you do.
Cool. Well, first, thanks for inviting me on. I didn't realize it was going to be the first guest, but I really appreciate that. So yeah, Bluestone Yeast, as the name suggests, we make yeast. We make liquid yeast here in Melbourne. And we've been around for about 5 years now. So started off in an innovation center and basically been growing by word of mouth. And yeah, so we've just moved to a new facility, so bigger and better things. And yeah, we provide liquid yeast to local brewers and to the homebrew market.
That's amazing. Now, for our American friends who listen to this podcast, the thing that you got to understand about the Australian yeast market in the brewing industry is that liquid yeast is actually pretty new. How long have you been around now? It's like 5 years or so?
Yeah, 4 or 5 years. But like the first 2 years, we were basically had about 10, 15 customers. So, you know, I don't know if it counts, but yeah. And yeah, that's right. Liquid yeast is relatively new to the Australian market. Those brewers that did know about it were flying it in from the US and it was getting here in pretty poor quality. And that's why we set up a local lab here in Australia to get a over that pain point of paying thousands of dollars of liquid yeast, 30% of it, that cost us in transport. And then when the product arrives, it's being held up at customs, it's got warm, it's half dead, it's a disaster. So we're solving that pain point for our customers.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. Exactly. And you've done an amazing job of that, I must say. So today we're going to talk about yeast in the context of a commercial brewery. One of the things that I have found over the years in dealing with all the different professional brewers that I deal with out there is that there is a distinct lack of the use of liquid yeast in commercial breweries. So why is yeast so expensive?
Well, it is expensive if you're only using the yeast once, right? So if you are throwing yeast in, you make your beer and you throw that yeast out, it becomes a really expensive proposition. And there's no need to be throwing your yeast out at the end of every brew. We recommend that our customers are reusing their yeast up to 7 times. And we know that the second, third, fourth brew with that yeast, that's when you're getting the best beer. So potentially, most brewers are throwing the yeast out before it's really hit its straps and it's making great beer, which is a real shame. But yeah, so it shouldn't be expensive.
Yeah, the indeed, line. Because I think that the thing that I find with a lot of professional brewers out there is that those brewers who solely use dry yeast, now, not to discount dry yeast or anything like that as being a bad thing. Like if you've just built a brewery, you've just opened, you've got so many other things to worry about. Dry yeast is definitely the way to go, in my opinion. But there comes a point where the brewer starts to have this mental perception that yeast is just this powder that you pour into the wort at the start of fermentation and then miraculously beer happens, but it's not that. It's like it's a living thing. So and it's something that's to be nurtured in a brewery and that sort of thing. So what do you think is stopping a lot of brewers from going down the path of using liquid yeast and repitching it and making better beer or cheaper beer out of it?
Look, I think definitely that the number one hurdle we find that our brewers face is basically fear, right? They're scared of change. And I get it, because I don't like change either. It's the fear of, okay, if they reuse their yeast, they're going to have a bad batch of beer, and that keeps them awake at night. And yeah, having a bad batch of beer would keep me awake. But now, if you are worried about infection and having a bad batch of beer, you got to maybe take a step back and look at, okay, why are you worried? What's your cleaning regime like? What's your CIP doing? And maybe they should contact you about their cleaning processes before they look to reuse their yeast. Now, if they've solved that problem, they're really confident in their robust cleaning, they're confident with the beer that's coming out, it's fresh, it's vibrant, there's no off flavors, then really they should be looking at repitching their yeast. They should be able to repitch their yeast safely, and that takes away a lot of that fear that they have. The next problem is, well, okay, how do I practically repitch my yeast? Like, how do I do it? Like, they're doing sales, they're doing ordering, they're doing invoicing, they're doing
brewing,
a thousand different things.
Yeah.
And then, okay, you throw reusing their yeast in on top of that. That's another challenge. It's another problem they have to solve. So that's another way that they should be contacting Rockstar Brewers to figure out how to repitch their yeast.
Don't promote me. That's not what this is about.
No, not at all. It's true. They have issues that they're trying to solve, and it can seem like a major problem that they can tackle. Now we developed
I call it barnacles on the boat.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Which is basically, you get that if I hear so often a lot of brewers, when you suggest a new way to do something in the brewery, they're very hesitant and they're very resistant to change, because they say, oh, but that's the way we've always done it, right?
Yeah.
And I call that the barnacles on the boat, because if you have a boat sitting in port for a long period of time, the barnacles are going to start to grow. And then when you start to sail that boat, the barnacles are actually dragging and holding the boat from going as fast as it possibly could.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. You look at something like using dried yeast. They've always used dried yeast. They open a packet, they throw it in. That's how we've done it. And that's a really good example of a barnacle on a boat, in the sense that dried yeast kicks off slower. It slows down your fermentation time. So your tank residency time is actually longer with dried yeast compared to liquid yeast, and also compared to when you repitch your yeast. So it's slowing down the capacity of your brewery by using dried yeast. So that's a great analogy.
That's one of the things that I'm pretty massive on, is the tank residence time thing. The last episode that we recorded was all about beer carbonation and the fact that a lot of brewers take about 5 days or so to carbonate a beer. How much time can you save, let's say your typical pale ale IPA type beer, for as an example, because all yeast behave differently. What tank residence time reductions could I realize from repitching yeast?
So the feedback we've gotten from a bunch of our brewers is that they save about 30% time in their tank residency time. Now, that was one of the best decreases in tank residency time we've seen, so I'd like to promote that one. But you should be able to expect between a 10 and 30% decrease in tank residency time. Now, what does that really mean to a brewery? Well, actually, that potentially means a 30% increase in your brewery's production capacity, because that you're turning over those tanks faster and you're able to get more out of your equipment.
And you don't have to spend any capital, no capital expenditure either.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was done by a brewery who was using liquid yeast that they were flying in from the States. They switched over to us, and then they got a 30% decrease in tank residency time, which just blew me away, because it was really a like-for-like product. So I wouldn't have expected such a big increase or such a big decrease. But then our yeast is super fresh. So it was coming out of our propagator. We hold it for at least a week to pass QC, and then we ship it to the brewery. So it's at peak performance. So when it hits their tank, it's fermenting quicker. It's cleaning up the diacetyl quicker. And the beer is finishing off faster and better, and it's tasting great.
Yeah, awesome. And so you sort of like mentioned like the practical aspect of it. A lot of professional brewers don't know where to start with regards to repitching yeast. What if you could give your top three places that you could start if you were going from I pitch dry yeast and I throw it out every time to I'm doing even something like a moderate level of going down that path of repitching yeast and doing, say, three cycles. What would be the top sort of three things you would need to do in your brewery just to start?
First off, you need to have a good sensory program, which I think most breweries will have. And that's important because that's your number one way of checking the yeast, I guess, performance, in the sense that you taste the beer. If it's not hitting all your sensory marks, then maybe you shouldn't be reusing that yeast, because something's happened in your process that's possibly affected that yeast. Now, if 99 times out of 100, your beer is tasting great. So, okay, the beer is tasting great. Now I can move some of it across to the next fermenter. And you want to be moving it across depending on the strain. So something like our San Diego, which is like a US05 or Cal Ale strain. Yep. You want to be moving that yeast. You want to be using that moving that across at about, day six. Now, you don't move all the yeast across. You want to leave some yeast in the tank to finish up doing what it's doing. But usually that beer makes three times as much yeast as it needs for the next beer. So you can move over a portion of that yeast into your next tank, start your next brew.
Oh, so you're saying that I don't have to wait for fermentation to complete before I repitch that yeast into another cone?
Yeah. And actually, that's
tell me more about that. That's interesting, because I've never really done that before. Because the way that I've done it in the past is waiting for fermentation to complete, putting the beer on chill or down to 0 degrees or 32 Fahrenheit, and then letting the yeast settle out somewhat, taking the Trub and the lazy yeast out and repitching that. Repitching mid-ferment.
So you can do that, definitely. That's still a good way of doing it. And it works that way. It works really well for breweries who are lining up their brews so that they're going to brew, at the end of that ferment, they're going to brew the next. You want to do that. But one of the reasons why you want to capture that yeast a little bit earlier, so, when it's up at that 80% finish or so, is the yeast is at its best performance right there, right? It's super healthy. It hasn't been stressed by, looking around for food. It's going well. And so you can take a portion of that yeast, move it over, and it's kicking on. It's doing its thing. It hasn't started to hibernate and go, okay, there's no more food around, I'm gonna shut down and wait for more food. So you're gonna get it performing a little bit faster in the next tank.
If I take yeast out of a active fermentation to repitch into another tank, is there any impact on the tank that I'm taking the yeast out of? So if I'm taking cells out of a tank, for example, as it's heading up towards a diacetyl rest, am I going to slow down the diacetyl rest from happening?
No, you shouldn't slow it down, because there is sufficient yeast there to finish off the beer. Obviously, you don't want to take all the yeast out. You have to be careful, but you want to be taking out enough for your next brew, which is probably about a quarter to a third, depending on your brew size. And then you're leaving all the rest in there to finish its job.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I've genuinely never done that way before, and I've never heard it that way, because I can think that would be actually give you some flexibility around your production schedule, right? Is that I think that might be one of the constraints that might stop brewers from going down the path of repitching yeast, because they feel like they have to wait for a tank to finish fermenting, to crash chill it, then they're going to harvest it, then they've got to brew. But I guess if you have a longer time frame, a longer window where you could harvest the yeast, and I'm sure you would want to create some consistency around that so you get some consistency in the beer outcome, but it certainly gives you a much more flexibility.
Yeah, yep, yep. And it does really depend on the beer that you're pushing across, because you're going to be pushing across some of that beer across with your yeast because it might not be as concentrated. We're not talking huge numbers. We're talking like an extra 10 or 20 liters, maybe.
Percentage-wise, we're tiny.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, if it's a dark beer, you're not going to repitch that into a lager, for example. Yeah. But maybe if you're first starting out to repitch your yeast, maybe let's not go to the advanced level. Let's take a step back and do that process that you talked about, where you're going to crash a beer, get rid of the true, harvest your yeast, and then repitch it. So you can do that a couple of ways. You can just get rid of the true, put your connections, then push some yeast across to your fermenter. So called cone to cone. Stand, probably one of the most popular ways to reuse your yeast, because you're not worried about storing the yeast. Was my keg clean? Was the vessel I'm storing it in clean? All those sorts of things. You're just pushing it straight across and you're good to go. That's the best way. That's probably the first starting point, I think. And then how much do you push across? That probably about a third of the yeast that you've used, that's going to come out of your fermenter. Now that can be hard to figure out. So there will be a bit of trial and error.
No, it's not hard at all. It's really easy.
Okay.
Do you want to know? Yeah. Do you want to how to calculate it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's really cool. So Matty Wolf, one of my good mates and one of my teaching partners at the TAFE Queensland, he said this thing to me. He said, if you've got inch and a half tri-clover and typical brewer's hose for inch and a half tri-clover, 1 meter is 1 liter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Sorry, American non-metric brewers, but here we are. Metric wins again. Freedom units. Yeah, who knows? One foot is half is 0.27 of a gallon.
Yep.
Who knows? But yeah, one meter is 1 liter. So what you can actually do is on that hose between on your work line between the tank that you're harvesting from and the tank that you're brewing into, if you know that you need 5 liters of yeast, well, you can set up the bypass and a sight glass on both ends of that between those two tanks, and you can see the transition from wort to yeast and yeast back to wort, and you know that you're gonna get that 5 liters of yeast slurry from one tank to the next.
Oh wow, yeah, that's just pretty clever.
No flow meter required. So
yeah, and so if you needed 10, you just do that twice.
You could do it twice, exactly. Yeah. So you could start your knockout, pull some yeast through, look at the sight glasses, stop, send some more wort through, stop, pull some more yeast through, there's 10 liters.
Exactly. I love it. I love the low techie sort of aspect to that.
Me too.
Because it means that anybody can do it.
Anytime you don't need to go and buy something expensive just to make something work, I'm a massive fan of, and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
So speaking of equipment, now we've established that you don't need a flow meter in order to do cone-to-cone repitching. If there was a brewer who was going down the path of repitching yeast for the first time, what's some of the basic equipment they would need to make that happen?
Well, it sounds like they need a couple of sight glasses and a five meter length of hose.
Five meter hose. Well, depends on how much you want to pitch, but every beer is different. But
well, actually, you don't need any equipment to just start out. Right, just like you said, you could just push some across. You need sensory, so which I'd say every brewery is doing now. That anybody is pushing beer out there without checking their beer, and then just pushing some across. So that would be it. Like good CIP, push some across and have a go would be what I say. If some brewers want to know a little bit more, they want to look at things, you can use a microscope and do some cell counting, but it's not essential. you basically, it can give you confidence. You can count cells, you can look at viability. So you just use some tripound blue or methylated methylene blue to look at some cell viability, which can be good to do to make sure that everything's going well in tank, that you've got a high viability count, you can push it across. And that's really about it. Now, if you want to store your yeast, like you've got a few days between this tank finishing, the next brew starting, it's a Friday, whatever, you can use like a converted keg, so a yeast brink to do that. Or we've got this clean pitch system, which is basically just a hose that screws onto the end of a sanitized, a sterile container. You fill it up, you cap it, you put it in the cold room, and you can just pitch the next day or pour it in the top, just like you would pour in dried yeast, you'd pour in liquid. The good thing about that is because it's clear, and depending on the strain, it settles out, you can see basically how much yeast you have in your container. So if you're worried about maybe the yeast didn't settle out and you're worried that maybe you haven't pushed over a high concentration of yeast into that thing, into that fermenter, you could harvest it, leave it in your cold room overnight. It'll have settled out. You can tell how much yeast you have based on how many centimeters of settled yeast you have.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, okay, because so these containers you're talking about are known volume, and you can...
They're known volume, they're see-through, and you can see the yeast settle out. So we have a little guide to show how many centimeters equals how much yeast you have, roughly.
Roughly speaking, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
yeah. It's interesting because like anything, you can like anything in a brewery, you can start with the basics and just be doing the job. Right.
That's
and
right.
Is it? Yep. I find that a lot of brewers, they don't even start because they think that they need a Porsche. They need the Porsche of yeast husbandry systems in their brewery.
Yep.
But in actual fact, what they need is a ute. And I just realized there are Americans listening. So that a ute is a pickup truck. And if you're a South African brewer, it's a baccy, right? So, so having a pickup truck as opposed to the Porsche, there is nothing wrong with that, and you're going to be repitching yeast absolutely fine.
Yeah.
I think it's only when you get to that point. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, they only really need a skateboard. They don't even need you can do it, like you said, very low tech with a hose and some sight glasses, right? That's where they should start. Even just do a small batch of something.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many other brewers I talk to as well. They're like, oh, I'm not repitching yeast until I get the oculi system and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
They want to spend thousands of dollars on equipment just before they even start. But none of that is really relevant. You can just put the yeast across. If you've got good plant sanitation, good CIP practices in play, that you can at least start. And only then when it comes to later, when you want to dial in that last sort of 5 or 10%, go and get yourself a microscope and a hemocytometer and some methylene blue. Like the really good thing I think these days is that optics have become so cheap in the last sort of 5 to 10 years. The microscope that I have downstairs in my garage, in my home brewery, I got it off eBay. It was $400 and it comes with a digital camera and it hooks up to my computer.
Wow.
And I don't even have to, it was amazing. And
That is amazing.
And it's like, and it does the job. I can count yeast cells. The only thing I would suggest, though, Derek, mate, is don't skimp out. If you're going to buy a hemocytometer, don't buy a cheap $5 or $10 one on eBay, because I did that once. And you know what happened with the thing? The fucking lines weren't parallel.
Yeah. So, when I was first starting out and I was just researching this, I grabbed a couple of cheap hemocytometers on eBay or Alibaba or one of those. And I put it under the microscope and I went, what the hell is this? It's like double lines, triple lines. They weren't even parallel. It's like, all right, no, you're 100% right. You got to buy a good hemocytometer, German ground glass.
Yes.
Because
with the mirror and the mirror backing on it, which I think I find really good. And so the ones that I buy from Labco here in Brisbane, they're $150 Australian. right?
Yeah.
And so we're not talking a huge amount of money. So $300 or $400 for a microscope, $100, $150 for a hemocytometer, $500 and you're counting yeast. It's so easy.
But it's so easy for somebody to fall into a trap and go, why would I pay $150 for a hemocytometer when I can get one for $5 on eBay? And the reason you don't do that is the way a hemocytometer works, it's a known volume underneath the glass, underneath the microscope, that you're counting a known volume, very, very precise. And then you're timing that up to the volume in your tank. So
yes,
even a 0.1% off in that hemocytometer has a huge effect when you're timesing by tens of thousands of millions, right? It's, you're just amplifying that error, yes, basically.
100%.
And that's why you just spend the small investment in a good quality hemocytometer. It repays it.
The most expensive thing you've got to go and buy, and it's just like you don't skimp out on it and that sort of thing. Well, go on.
I was going to say, and really, that's only for the intermediate yeast read pictures. The beginner doesn't even need to go down that road, right? They can just have a go.
You got your hose. There you go. That's easy.
You got a
so yeah. Speaking of the cost and that sort of thing, right? And so, as I said before, dry yeast has a place in a brewery, particularly when a brewery is new and starting out, and there are a lot of other things to be worried about in the brewery when you get your first batches of beer out. And dry yeast has its advantages in that, like fermenters, like they basically say easy to use, and it 100% is, right? It's very easy to use. It's very convenient, but you pay for that convenience. And if we talk about sort of like, if I was going to take your product in a 10 hectoliter tank, and I was going to pitch it once and then dump it at the end, that would be a very expensive proposition, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. That would be probably three times more expensive than if you use dried. And just on dried yeast is a good product, right? It makes good beer. It's really convenient. It's shelf stable. Every brewery should have some dried yeast as a backup, even if they're using liquid, right?
Absolutely.
It sits on the shelf. You do not have to worry. You know that you have your dried yeast as a backup, because if something always happens, you need it. It's a really good product, but it's very boring in flavor. I shouldn't say boring. You've got a limited range in terms of flavor.
Yes.
And also it's a little bit slower.
Not every yeast strain is available in its dry form.
Yep,
and so
absolutely.
As opposed to if you go down the path of liquid yeast, or let's say I'm a head brewer of a brewery and I have a particular strain that's not used in other breweries, I can bank my yeast strain with you and you can prop it up whenever I need it and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. And we do offer that service for a number of our breweries. We biobank for them, and we don't charge extra. We just charge them for the amount that for our normal amount. Our normal price for our normal strains, but they do have to buy a minimum amount so that we don't lose money on the batch. They have to make a 10 liter purchase for that brew. Yeah, so we offer that service, but also too, we offer a lot of strains that other breweries can't access in the dried format, and so they get better flavor just by using our normal SKUs. And we're astounded, basically, of how many of our customers win awards with our yeast. They win, they're making gold medal winning beers, or they're becoming champion brewers, or they're winning champion lagers, or and all because it's not that we're amazing. If the yeast is fresh and it's different to what every 95% of the other breweries are doing, so you've got a point of difference with liquid yeast, because you know that 95% of the brewers in Australia using dried yeast, which is really different to the US, where 70% of brewers over there use liquid yeast.
Yeah, right. That's probably a bit of a transition thing, because the liquid yeast market locally here is quite new and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it in terms of like the cost savings you can realize from repitching yeast. So for example, your typical dry lager yeast strain at the moment for a 500 gram brick of it, you're going to be paying $150 Australian. So let's call it $120 US and that sort of thing. And if you pitch it at the rates in which they say, 100 grams per hectolitre or 100 grams per barrel, as far as a 50 litre keg or a half barrel keg goes, you're talking about $15 Australian or $12 per keg, right? And so I've done some rough numbers there, and I found if you repitch three times, you can get the cost down to a couple of bucks a keg. But if you do six, I think six is pretty reasonable. You say seven, I say yep. six. Let's call the whole thing off. My calculations is you can get the yeast cost for a keg of beer from $15 down to just 40 cents.
Wow. Yeah, that's it's huge, phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah. And when you think about it that way, how healthy would your brewing business be if you could shave $14.60 off per keg of beer that you produce? And if you're doing cases of cans and that sort of thing, it's around the $2 to $3 mark off a case of beer. That's
huge.
Big numbers.
And that's money in the brewer's pocket. It's back in their pocket, back that they can invest in equipment or maybe go on a holiday. Who knows? But yeah, it's money back in their pocket. And so when brewers look at liquid yeast, they just look at the price of liquid yeast compared to dry. And we are expensive when you just look at a one brew process. But if you're repitching your yeast, on the third repitch, you're the same price as dry. And then you're also saving after that, less than dried. And the other thing too is our QC is more strict than dried. So we know that our yeast is cleaner. So it gives you that confidence that liquid yeast is cleaner than dried yeast. So it gives you the confidence to repitch. And that's the advantage of liquid over dry in terms of that contamination.
Them fine words, mate.
No, it's just fact, right? We've done the tests, right? We played out ours, we played out theirs, and we're like, you know, it's like, it's just we have to be that strict with our QC, and a lot of it's due to the way that the yeast is dried, right? It's in these mass drying machines that you cannot keep it 100% sterile because it's just too much. Just the nature. It's still dried yeast is still a good product, and it's good for one brew or two, but then that's it, right? So
that's why they say you can't repitch dry yeast?
I think that's one of the reasons, right? It is that that bacterial load is just too high for when you're repitching. Mm. Now, don't get me wrong, some brewers will repitch dried yeast a couple of times. Yeah. That they're on risk. But that's why such a high proportion of the American brewers repitch liquid yeast because they have the confidence that that liquid product is at a higher QC than the dry product.
Mm. And you said before that you propagate the yeast in your lab and then you sit on it for QC purposes for a week before you send it out the door to your client.
Yes.
Doesn't the yeast like die when it just sits there for a week doing nothing?
No. One of the differences with a yeast propagator and a brewery is we're growing the yeast in the best environment for yeast to grow. So it doesn't see alcohol. It's got plenty of oxygen. It's got all the nutrients. And it doesn't have hydrostatic pressure either in that it's not sitting at the bottom of the cone for a heap of time. We harvest it and we look after it. So our yeast, we know, is still viable after 3 months. We can store it for up to 3 months. Now, we have a cutoff of, about 2 months. We don't like to ship it out after that. It's still fine. And we will ship it if we know the brewer is going to use it straight away. Because once we ship it, we don't know how long it's going to be in that brewer's cold room. Right, we want to in tank as soon as possible. So we try and encourage the brewers to give us enough lead time that we can go, okay, we're shipping it on Monday. It's going to be in your tank on Wednesday. You're going to have beer pretty soon after that. So we like to shorten that lead time. So we hold it for a week because we're running QC on it. So we're running aerobic plates, anaerobic plates, lots of different selective media to look for wild yeast or that one positive lacto yeast or whatever, because nothing leaves our lab that hasn't gone through all that QC, because what contamination kills our business.
You live and die by QA and QC in your operation.
Yeah. And we have disappointed breweries where, in the sense that we've said we're going to deliver and something's happened and we've had to call them up on a Friday and say, hey, it's failed QC. We cannot ship on Monday. Really sorry. We have alternatives, but that's right. And that's heartbreaking for me. And it doesn't happen often, but to say that it doesn't happen would be a lie. It does happen sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I always say that good brewers put bad beer down the drain, and I would say a good yeast lab puts bad yeast down the drain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably 100%. Way more important.
Yeah. Because that impacts their entire operation. Because if we send them bad yeast and then they have to dump beer, then they're not going to be viable. They're not going to be a customer of ours, one, for long, or two, at all. We need our customers to come back to us all the time. So yeah, I remember when I first started, I would lose sleep after every shipment. Even though it's past everything, it's past QC. And then a month later, a brewer would call me up and I'm like having heart palpitations. And they go, oh, that was great. Can you send me another 12 liters of yeast next week? And I'm like, I can do that.
Mate, your approach to propagating yeast is how all the good brewers of the world approach making beer. Is like they make it, they send it out into the world, and they feel really dirty about it in their heads, going, oh, I could have done this better, could have done this better, but then realize that things are not so bad at the end of the day. You've got a little bit more weight on your shoulders, though, because you're making 12 litres of something which is going to go into however many litres of wort and therefore beer multiple times. That's huge, man.
Yeah. And actually, I think sometimes the brewers forget, they think of repitching yeast in a linear fashion, right? That one tank to one tank to one tank.
Yes.
When they can go one tank to three tanks.
Yes.
Or one tank to two tanks to six tanks.
To six, yep.
And that's only... Absolutely. And that's only two generations, right? They've got another like five to go, right? So the cost savings are huge, or potentially huge for them, depending on how they reuse their yeast.
Yeah. So if I was going to go down that path, because admittedly, one of the things that I say to the members of the Rockstar Brewer Academy community is do three cycles. I call it cycles, not generations.
Yeah.
I take the Charlie Bamforth methodology there. Yeah. That's what he says.
And totally agree. I don't like using the term generation, even though
generations.
I do,
so. It's cycles. Good, right? I'm going to buy your beer next time I see you. And so three cycles. You can safely do three cycles, and as you said, split them so you get two tanks out of one, or three tanks out of one source tank. And what I usually say is, beyond three cycles, then you'd want to consider putting in some equipment to be able to do some lab work, your own sort of QA, QC.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? Or do you think realistically, you could take that further without having a full-blown micro lab in your brewery?
Yeah, look, I think you can take it further. And I know a lot of my customers do. It all comes back to the confidence in your cleaning, right? Mm. It all comes back to cleaning, right?
Of course.
And how good you are with your sanitation. And again, that sensory program that you taste that beer, especially when you're getting up to that three or four cycles where, okay, really interrogate that beer. Is there any off flavor? Is that slight off flavor because you changed your hopping regime, or because you used a different malt? Or is it because maybe there's something in that fermentation? And I'm not saying that beer should be dumped. I'm just saying that
It's the traffic light thing. It's basically green light, yellow light, red light. Green light means, yep, let's sell it. Yellow light means we could have done better, but we'll sell it. And red light means don't sell it.
That's right. Yeah. So simple as that. So it's that same. So green light is, yes, I can repitch it. Yellow light is, yeah, the beer is okay to go out to market, but maybe I won't repitch the yeast.
Yep.
Right. And then that red light, well, yeah.
Discard it and end of that cycle, basically.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah, awesome. Mate, there's some really interesting stuff there. And I hope, and if you were just going to give your, say, top three tips on how to get started in 30 seconds, give me your top three tips on how a pro brewer can repitch yeast in their brewery.
Buy side glasses and a hose and push it across. That's it. That's all you need to do. Start with liquid yeast. Use the liquid yeast because you know that it is super clean, and just do a pale ale, push it across, and see how it tastes.
Mate, Derek Lacey from Bluestone Yeast, thanks heaps for the chat today. And
thank you,
Derek. How can people get in touch with you?
Look, go to our website, sign up, or email me at derek@bluestoneyeast.com.au, or you can call me on my phone number, 0401-219893. But I'm sure you're going to have a link to all of that in the show notes.
I will have a link to that in the show notes. And if you're watching this on YouTube, it's going to be in the video description and that sort of thing. So thanks very much for listening. Guys, if you are listening, Derek is going to join the Quality Focus Pro Brewers Facebook group, which I'm going to send him an invite to. And so if you want to speak to him in the Facebook group, or if you want the link to the Facebook group, just head to qualityfocusedprobrewers.com. You will see the link to, and that will have the link through to the Facebook group and that sort of thing. It's a pro brewer only safe space. Sorry, home brewers, I love you, but it's for pro brewers only. Make sure you answer the membership questions before you come in there. Come and have a chat to Derek and join the conversation. Derek Lacey, thanks heaps,
actually,
mate.
Thank you. But quickly, you know what? Your pro brewers could book a one-on-one meeting with me. I'll send you a link and they can just book a one-on-one meeting with me if they want to have a chat also. So definitely the Facebook group, but also we can add a special for Rockstar Brewers if they want to book a one-on-one meeting. Awesome. Super happy to do that.
Is that like a quick yeast assessment kind of session?
We can have a chat, a half-hour session, have a chat. If they have any questions, they just want to talk to somebody, I'm there.
Fantastic. Derek Lacey, thanks heaps, mate, and have yourself a great day. Cheers.
Thank you very much. Cheers.